Yes, 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 it is part two of episode 300 this week's Echo Chamber, people. And this one, boy, it's a great one. We got a new joint dropping, right? And so we look at that and we speak to the legend behind it. So buckle down, people, and let's get into it. Okay, so let's get it popping with Sex Positive. Okay, so people, thanks to Shirley and Kimmy at Entertainment Squad, I've just checked out this new indie joint called Sex Positive. It is directed by Peter Woodard, who co-wrote it with Marie Kirby. Executive produced by Gabriel Almaga and Peter Woodard with Ford Zeton. It is associate produced by John Perry and line produced by Laura Singletary. Doug Millage handles the music. Kathleen Garcia, cinematography. John Perry edits the piece. Tracy Camp handled the casting. Hair and makeup, we've got Jennifer Spivey, Holly Manders, Lanny Hale, and Renee Dagrepont. Art department, Sam Bess, Marcus Chapper Wilson. And our cast. Well, Virginia is played by Catherine Ellis. Jake, played by Aaron Long. There's Truly Happy Girl, played by Ashton Lee. Belle Eclair plays Cindy. Christian Menace plays Steve. Right. Jointer is played by Juliana De Stefano. Jeez Louise plays Leslie. Samantha is played by Tierney Mallory. Nigel is played by Anthony Del Negro. Ty Autry plays Ray. Lydia Calder plays Becky. Gugu McGregor plays Joanna. Bill is played by Yamal Rodriguez. Rod is played by Brandon Pitts. Brady Box is Chris. Azina Ziegest is January. Hank is played no other than Peter Woodard. Charlie is played by Ben Maffney. Grace is played by Teresa Alio. Winston, played by Ryan Bugman. His mother is played by Lara Grease, and his father is played by Gerard Brodin. Ian is played by Zach Rogers. Mrs. Spencer is played by Tracy Camp. Judith is played by Lorna Street Dobson. Hugo, Chris Ferrero. Donald, Mike Marker. Yeah, I think that's our main group of people. And the gist is this: Virginia tumbles into a wild and thrilling new world of sexual liberation when she moves in with a group of polyamorous party animals, including the charming but commitment phobic Jake. So yeah, that is it. Now, this is the directorial debut from Peter, right? He's been like, boy, he's, you know, been in TV, film. He's done a lot of voice work. So, yeah, I think he knows his way in front of the camera. And it looks like he knows his way behind the camera as well. Now, I wasn't quite sure what this was going to be, you know. So then when watching it, and yeah, it really is sex positive. You know, it basically is what it says on the tin, right? Everything is on display here. Everything is on display, which I think the good thing is it's not just women, right? Because, you know, I think when you watch TV and films and all of this, right? If you are a hot-blooded male, right? You're going to see plenty of breasts, right? Sometimes you see a bit more, you know? But you just think, like, women don't get the same. Don't get the same, right? And it's only certain things, like, I mean, Rome seemed to be the first to do it, right? Back in the day, that HBO series, which was great, 2 seasons. If you have not seen it, people, definitely go check it out. But you had Rome, and then Game of Thrones did it, right? Where, you know, they showed dick, which, yeah, it is that weird thing, because the human body is not scary, right? It's not scary. Everyone's got the bits, and you can see the bits anywhere. But for some weird reason, things don't show it. So you see these weird films and shows where, you know, like, you see all the girl, but then the guy's covering up with a towel or things like that. And it's always peculiar, right? It's just the way people act. And you just think, people don't act like that in real life, man. What the fuck are we doing? So, yeah, this one doesn't do that, right? And I think the thing that is good here is, although it's essentially a comedic piece, right, dealing with Virginia, who, I mean, she gets herself into some, just the opening situation with her failed date or hookup or whatever it is, you know what I mean? You're just like, yo, that's, I mean, what the fuck was that? How are you getting yourself into that situation, kid? You know, so we have that. And then she meets Jake, right? Who then, you know, talks her into this new thing. But so it's this comedy, but from this kind of journey Virginia is going on, we do get a lot of other topics kind of talked about. Right, like I mean, just gratification, you know what I mean? Like that, like penis size, breast size, like these things are talked about, you know, looks, what you actually are looking for in a partner, right? The things that you're willing to do and you're not willing to do. You know, I think that's interesting. There's one of the characters, like Leslie, she only likes girls, right? Doesn't want any penetration, which is absolutely fine. Because what is always interesting is sometimes you'll have a character and she's a lesbian, but then at some point, oh, she's getting fucked by a dude. And it's just like, what was that, right? Because it's not like she ever came out and was like, I'm bi, or, you know what I mean, I'm just pan or whatever, you know what I mean? It's just like, no, I'm straight lesbian. But then for whatever reason, she sleeps with some dude, and it's always a weird thing. So this character, she doesn't, you know? So I think that's good, because it's just like, look, you can be this or you can be that. And so it looks at all of these different things in this way, right? There's orgies and sex parties, but it's like no one is pressured into doing anything, right? It's what your gratification is what, you know, you will do. Then there's like the notion of relationships are looked at, right? And the things, because it's just like, you know, as I said, that like in this polyamory, you know what I mean, swinging kind of culture, kink culture, right? And so it's when certain things move, it's not like you must give this up. Everyone's like accepting of what these people want to do, you know? But everything seems to get discussed in a open way, you know? There's a funny scene where they go to some BDSM and, you know, and it's just like, what are you into? And they just, she's it's just sex. And it's just reaction from that, right? It's truly speaks to parents. And that, just the look on the parents' face is hilarious. Oh my, it's funny. It is funny. There are definitely some funny ass moments in this, right? Now, I would say, like, when it started off, it did feel like Virginia was a little OTT, you know what I mean? It was getting played up a little bit, but then it kind of just settles into a flow. And after that, yeah, I would say this was enjoyable. You know, I wouldn't say it's necessarily all the time realistic in the approach, right? It was like in the orgies and all of this, it was kind of like that porn thing. You know what I mean? Like when Harry met Sally, everyone's coming in that certain way, right? When not everyone comes like that, right? Not everyone comes like that. So there was that. But you can kind of get like they're trying to make it a bit funny and all of this. But I think when you boil it down, right? When you peel everything back and you boil it down to its essence, there are some actual, you know, real honest and sweet moments here when it's just like, you know what I mean, dealing with some of these topics. And I think that was very good. That was good. That was nice. That was, you know, poignant, because, you know, you get to kind of maybe have discussions during or after the film. You know, I mean, if you're renting it, you can just stop it. And, you know, maybe you pose that question to whoever you're with, right? Or at the end, you have that conversation. So that's good. As I said, it's not shying away from certain things, you know, or taboos, as it were. You know, I did not know of, I'd say, a huge chunk of the sexual sexual dalliances, the lists, basically, they were most of that shit, I'm just, yo, what the fuck is that? Wait, what does that mean? Huh? Right, yeah. I don't know if all of that was real, if they made any of those up, you know what I mean? Maybe that's a game people play, right? You watch the film and you do the positions when they're mentioned. I don't know. That's up to, I guess that's up to Peter and Marie and the rest of the people who made this to decide. But yeah, no, on the real, it's, yeah, as I said, it's enjoyable. It was fun, right? I thought there's these slow motion shots which are funny, but they do work. They do work very well. So I thought, you know, as a first feature, Peter does a great job actually framing this up and show coasting. My words are like, ooh. But yeah, it looks good. It plays well. It's enjoyable. So I will say, right, if you like the kind, you know, this kind of comedy, right? If you think of like Zack and Miri Make a Porno, you know, Bottoms, right? Super Bad, Knocked Up, right? That kind of thing. If that, and we looked at something last at the beginning of last year about a couple, right, who go to a sex club, and I cannot for the life of me remember, because that was very good. And if you like that, you would like this. I know that's not overly helpful. It was like End of the Affair, or oh fuck, man, that's gonna really bug the fuck out of me. But anyway, people, if you like that kind of comedy, that little bit like that raunchy, but you know, not like offensive, you know, if that's your thing and you're not put off by sexual nature, you know what I mean, then listen, Sex Positive is gonna be for you. You will enjoy it. It will make you smile. And it might have you, as I said, pose some questions, you know, have some discussions. But see, I feel it's that kind of film, you know what I mean? So, people, it will be hitting cinemas on the 9th of February. And it is coming to VODs in May, right? So mark those down on the calendar, because yeah, you might want to give it a go. It's play it by ear again as well, right? Not quite the same thing, but that was, you know, that was that online TV series, right? And as I said, it's not the same thing, but it poses some similar questions like that one. And the End of Sex was the other film that we looked at last year, right? So yeah, if those type of things are for you, Sex Positive will be as well, right? So the 9th of February in cinema, and in May for VOD. Look, once I get a proper date, I'll put it on the website. But yeah, Sex Positive, go check it. And now it's time to hear from an acting legend making his feature directorial debut. It's the one and only Peter Woodward. Okay, people, so today I am joined pretty much by an acting legend, Peter Woodard, right, who has got his feature directorial debut dropping shortly. Peter, thank you so much for joining me, man.
That's fine. It's Woodward.
Oh my God.
Right. This legend is called Woodward.
Woodward. You know what? This is a crazy thing, because I was looking at your IMDb the other day, and it said your dad's Edward. And I thought, I wonder what the rest of his family has done. And then I saw he's doing the Equalizer, and I was like, oh, I always thought his name was Edward Woodward. And then, but then for some reason, I thought your name was Woodard. Oh my God.
No, I'm a proud Woodward, but don't worry.
Okay.
as long as I don't call you Kevin Snot. I bet you got that at school, did you?
No, but I get called Scott all the time.
Right, yeah.
Sign off an email, best wishes, Kevin. It'll be like, hello, Scott, how are you? And I was just like, yeah, what are we doing here? Okay, so we got Peter Woodward here. Peter, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it, man.
Not at all. It's my pleasure.
Ah, splendid, splendid. So, man, you've got your new film, your first feature film, like, that you've directed, dropping soon. How does that feel?
Well, it feels really very interesting. I mean, I directed in the theatre, and I used to direct a lot of fight scenes and stunt scenes, and I used to do those on screen. and as an actor and a screenwriter, I've been around for so long that probably even longer than you, Kevin. I've been around for so long that, I basically know how it all works. And but it really was quite a plunge into the pool to direct my first movie. And also, what an idiot to choose as a first movie a script of my own, which my agent said, "I don't know how to sell this." And so I thought, "Well, I know how to make it, so I'll just make it." But of course, it has a huge cast, and it was a bit crazy to choose something. I mean, most first-time directors, they have four people together in a room whispering to each other and murmuring for half an hour, and then they go outside into the garden and it's one shot, and then they murmur for another half an hour, and the movie's over. But no, this is a huge, sprawling, enormously fun comedy called Sex Positive, as you can see behind my right ear. it's a subject matter that's difficult for some people, especially in the United States, to sell. And it's a huge cast. We shot it in a mansion in New Orleans, which was amazing. I mean, we shot virtually all of it there. And it's about a young woman who comes across a group of people who have basically a sex positive lifestyle, and they live in this mansion, and it's run by the women, of course, because otherwise it wouldn't be safe. It's run by the women, and the women say what happens and what doesn't happen, and every other night they have a sex party. And so you can imagine how my wonderful Los Angeles agent said, "Peter, I don't know how to sell this. I don't know what to do with this." And he was absolutely right. Of course, it's extremely difficult to sell, and because of the subject matter, although there's nothing remotely pornographic about it,
No.
nothing even obscene about it. But there is nudity, and of course, so it won't sell to China. It won't sell anyway, like that, and. Really, the important thing is, as far as the American audience is concerned, that it has male nudity as well as female. Again, I say nothing naughty, nothing obscene, but very funny, I hope. The problem is that the American male hasn't had a penis since about 1975, or at least according to Hollywood. All American males have lost their penises, apparently. We can see naked ladies, although we don't see them nearly enough, in my opinion. But we never see naked men. I mean, I think we got a flash of Richard Gere in the 70s sometime, and but I just find that, as an Englishman in the United States, I find that ridiculous.
It is a weird one because I remember. So the two TV shows that really jump out that just were equal equalities on the nudity front were HBO's Rome back in the day and Game of Thrones.
Right,
But
yes.
I mean, it was still in balance the amount, but they showed full frontal of everyone. And it's this bizarre thing because I remember reading about Rome, and I thought, right, that Italy would be all about it, but that was the country that censored it the most.
Isn't that extraordinary? Yeah.
Yeah,
I
that
mean,
and the US censored it as well, a lot of it. I think the UK was one of the only countries where you saw most of it, essentially,
I
which is
think,
very
yeah,
odd.
I think, actually, UK is pretty far in advance of most countries as far as this is concerned. I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? Because I understand that some people are offended by the human body, and some people don't like stories. For instance, this is a romantic comedy, but it's a romantic comedy about sex and the way that people deal with sex and the funny things they do with it and don't do with it and all their hang-ups about it. It focuses on that, And you know, our leading lady Catherine, who plays the character of Virginia, comes into this house, and like most people, I think she's completely gobsmacked. You know, but she gets used to it, and that's the thing. You know, if you actually show the human body on screen, but not in an unpleasant way, you know, either in a comic way or in just a simple practical way. I mean, every time we see the statue of David, you know, on screen, which we see a lot, there he is. He's naked. Now he's made of stone, okay? But nevertheless, there he is. And I know that there are certain states in the USA which are trying to censor just about everything. But I don't think that's what it is, because, as you say, HBO, you know, that they have done things with nudity when it's part of the story. And I understand that people, you know, don't like exploitative nudity, and they don't like to feel they're being exploited when they're watching it. You know, there's nothing worse than seeing a movie or something where suddenly there's a naked woman in it, and you think, what has that got to do with anything? You know,
Well,
it's hardly ever a naked man, mind you.
no, it's because I remember, oh my God, my mind is so terrible. The Halle Berry, right? Back in the day, there was a film, Hugh Jackman was in it, and it was the big talk was this was the first time Halle Berry was gonna do a nude scene, and she's reading a book. The book comes down, she's topless, and then the book goes up.
I mean, it's
And
ridiculous, isn't it?
it was just like that does nothing for the story, right? A
No.
lot of times there's a shower scene that does nothing for the story, but that's why. And it's really quite baffling the way this is, because I think when you look at alcohol, right, and I think they've done studies where in a lot of European countries like Italy, they like children have a little can have a little, you know, they often have a bit of wine with their meal. So then once they're of a certain age, it's not, oh, let's binge because, you know, I want to try what this is, because they've tasted it and it's just like, eh, not for me, or I mean, you know what I mean? And so it's a different relationship, and I think when you hide sex from people, then they're like, what is it? What is it? I need to try it. I need to try it. Just
And
show.
also the other thing is that, you know, 99.9% of the population, certainly the male population, watch porn. You know,
Oh.
if not all the time, at least from time to time. You're the 0.01% that doesn't. I understand that, Kevin. But nevertheless, you know, I mean, most of us do, and you know, I mean, we see everything. And do you think that our kids don't see that at the age of 8? Of course they do. I wish they didn't. You know, I'm one of those people who actually is quite old-fashioned about the internet. I would restrict the internet, you know, to anyone under the age of, I don't know, 16, 15, 14. I don't know, you take your pick. Because the things you see on there are just absolutely mind-blowing and completely disgusting. And, you know, that I can understand. You know, we don't want to see that on the screens that are, you know, that are our friendly television screens. But it's foolish for us to think that they're not on any other screen that we want to watch. And you know, I especially with this movie, I also was dealing as a person who remembers the 70s. Okay, I'm that old. I was dealing with a completely new generation of 20-year-olds, late 20s, most of them, who, although they've been brought up and raised on the internet, were not brought up with the same liberal attitudes as far as sex is concerned as I was, and probably as you were. You know, things have changed in that way. Now, you could say that things have got worse. That's an opinion, but they certainly changed. And I personally think I miss an enormous amount of the sort of shows that we used to have in the old days, the really great TV shows in which there wasn't deliberate nudity, but if it was there, it was there. You know, if you have two people who are in love or who fall in love and who go to bed together, It's ridiculous to cut to the next morning, you know, because a huge part of our relationships together, whatever our sexuality is, a huge part of it is what happens between the sheets or, you know, up against a wall or wherever you want to be. And to ignore that is to say, OK, these are my characters. Here they are. You're seeing them do everything, but you're not seeing them do that. And yeah. That's absurd, you know.
Well, it's very weird because a lot of times when you see people in bed, right, the woman's naked, but the guy's got his underwear on.
Oh, isn't that weird? Isn't that strange how that happens?
It's the most bizarre thing. Or the woman gets out of bed, but she's like covering herself up. And it's just like, no one gets out of bed like that. What do we do?
Yeah. This the camera changes and you see the man's butt, but you just don't see his penis. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And, you know, I think it gives, you know, especially young people watching it, a very twisted idea of what relationships are.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, a lot of relationships, sex at some point, usually at the beginning, sex is a huge part of that. And if you try and you know, ignore it or say it's not a part of it or it is a part of it, but we're not going to show you that bit, then, you know, how are you going to understand the full breadth and width of the human character if you don't understand sexuality? Now, I mean, a lot of people, fortunately now, don't have this problem about understanding their own sexuality because now we are much more open to different sexualities. When I was a very young boy, homosexuality was still illegal in England. Yeah. Actually illegal, can you imagine? Mm. And, you know, but there are still countries where it is. Transgender people are just now, you know, saying I have a right to be what I am and I'm standing up for it. And that's great. And asexual people too, you know, I mean, all kinds of the whole amazing variety that humanity has. The good thing is now that people can stand up and be what they want to be. But somehow you don't see what you want to see. You know?
No.
Now, I understand it completely, especially trying to sell this movie. You know, if you are going to make a movie in Hollywood, then you're making it basically for the Chinese market. You know, half your market is going to be China and the Far East and Japan and certainly the Arab and Muslim world, and they are not going to take anything with any nudity at all.
No.
Or they'll put the scissors in and cut it.
Yeah.
But with my movie, you know, it's basically about people discovering their sexuality and how funny it is and how different it is and how they try things and don't like them and try other things and like them very much. You know, and that's something that we all go through. All of us go through that. You know, we try things and we think, oh, that does work for me and that doesn't work for me. And, you know, I'm more this way or more that way. That's what we do as human beings. And it's a whole area of our humanity, which is ignored by virtually all of the mainstream creators of content, whether it's television or movies. The only people who are honest about it, frankly, are the pornographers who say, this is what you want to see. Here it is. Yeah. You want to see a bit of that? Oh, we'll give you some of that. You know, and that's not what I want to see. Porn has its place, but I want to see real stories about real people having real sex because that's what they do, folks.
Yes. Well, the irony of it is there's a couple of things, right? Because there are what I've noticed, and over here anyway, that there's so many news articles about people getting into
polyamorous.
Thank you, Gina.
Polyanimous is something different, I think.
But yeah, getting into those sorts of relationships or going on sex holidays. There's so many articles about that, you know, trying a threesome, things like that. And then you've got all the TV shows. Right, the reality TV shows. Like there was a show over here, I think it was on Channel 4, about couples going to some sort of mansion and they could all then, have orgies and threesomes or whatever they wanted to do.
Yeah.
It was kind of get, you just had to ask, and whoever's up for it does it. There's this show called Naked Attraction,
Yep. Yes. Yeah. No. I
right?
mean.
And then when you just get all the other things like Married at First Sight, Love is Blind, right? Because what they're because they're not really showing you relationships, you know what I mean? Because I think Love is Blind, you talk in these, you don't see someone, you have a few conversations, and you have to decide if you're going to, you want to marry someone within, I think it's like 5 days or something. Then they
It's
send
really
them,
natural.
they send them to a foreign country or just a beach resort where they're staying in a hotel. You're only sending someone to a beach resort if you're trying to get them to have sex, right? So we have this weird situation where you're pushing sex, but you're trying to pretend that you're not pushing sex,
Yeah,
but then you
absolutely.
don't want to show it or talk about it. It's
Yeah.
bizarre.
It is strange. I mean, what I also think is that, and this is a bit of a shame, that the whole idea of the romantic comedy, the great days of the romantic comedy, like in the 40s and 50s, okay, there was no sex there, but they were incredibly sexy, precisely because they couldn't do anything. They really pushed against the boundaries of what was possible, and I mean, so often, especially if very often, I think of Lauren Bacall and Humphrey Bogart, the extraordinary relationship they had on screen, when they had just become lovers, and they remained in love for the rest of his life, and the electricity between them was extraordinary. And that was in a so-called romantic comedy. Now our idea of the romantic comedy is a comedy that has nothing to do with real romance, but has everything to do with, lifestyle romance. Shall I call it that? Lifestyle, which is just—it's just—I think that's the worst word in the world, frankly. It's not real, because it's. In the old days, you couldn't do sex because you simply weren't allowed to. So you played it in a different way. Nowadays, it's ignored, and it's almost dirtier than it's ever been. If you see a woman or a man in their underwear in the bedroom, that's to me, that's it's not just silly, it's actually slightly disgusting because nobody does that, I mean, when you go to bed together and have sex, you don't wear underwear. Well, you do for a little while, maybe, if that's your thing. And it really is a problem. I understand that, that some people, and there may be some people listening to this who think what we're saying is absolutely disgusting. I have a suspicion, probably not. They'll have turned off some time ago. But I mean, since I've come out to Los Angeles, well, 25 years ago now, I've really noticed that there's a whole world, and it's not just sex either, it's a lot of things. There's a whole world that goes on behind closed doors and in people's homes and at private parties. There's a whole world which is not recognised. And I don't mean just sex, I mean bad things as well. Drug taking happens generally behind closed doors, stuff you don't want to happen. If you're trying like me to make a fun story, which is actually about someone, a young lady, discovering their sexuality and what they like and what they don't like and what their boundaries are and all of that sort of stuff. I mean, how do you do it without nudity? You can't. I mean, there's no penetrations or anything like that in my movie, because obviously that would be pornographic, and I don't want to show that anyway. If you want to see that, then it's pornography, and that is the most watched screen time of all, throughout the world, pretty much. But when you just want to make a little romantic comedy, but just keep the sex in it rather than saying, no, that's nothing to do with us. It's really tough. It's also tough to sell this particular movie because there are no stars in it. Because naturally enough, a lot of agents, when we approached, obviously I had a producer early on who wanted, let's try and get some stars in this, and every movie I've ever been in the beginning of, and I've been in at the beginning of a few of them, they always say, some producer always sits up and says, oh, I think this would be great for that film star or that big movie star. And you think, we have a budget of how much? And it's like, obviously, no agent of a existing film star was willing to let their client even read this script. And I couldn't have afforded them anyway.
Yeah.
So, I had to go out and find a cast of young people who also, quite rightly, were really nervous about this because they wanted to know who I was. Now, you can look up on IMDb and see what I've done and been in, and I'm relatively straightforward and, but they wanted to be reassured that they weren't just going to be taken advantage of.
Yes.
That this wasn't a sort of porn movie, being made by the back door. This really was what it said it was. So it was quite difficult, especially as at the time we were in lockdown because of COVID. So all the casting had to happen on screen.
Right.
And that's quite difficult to do. I have to say that it's not as difficult as I thought it was. But there are also all kinds of rules that you have to put out there. If you see a character as, let me think of something provocative, a tall black man who, for the purposes of the story, needs to have a reasonably large penis. You can't cast that. You can't say, I must have a black man, because everyone else says, no, you can't say that. Like, listen, they don't do in Hollywood. No, you can't say that anymore. And he has to have a large penis. No, you can't even mention the word penis. It's just ridiculous, So, I happen to have a character of this black guy who works at a swing club and is fairly well endowed. How do you cast such a role? You legally now, you cannot say, would you mind taking your kit off so I can see you? In the old days, they used to have rooms full of executives, and they would say to usually female, almost always female actors, mm-hmm. would you mind taking your top off, please? We need to see the goods, and so they dutifully did. And it was horrible, absolutely horrible, but I found myself in a similar position. How was I supposed to do this? So I just found the best actor I could and took a chance on it. And the actor involved, one of the actors involved anyway, actually contacted me after I'd cast him and said, by the way, Peter, you don't need to worry. I'm okay in that department. So, and you have to go through this whole rigmarole. You can't be honest about it, because, all kinds of people are going to get offended. And I'm sure it will still offend some people. I very much wish I'd been able to have, I wrote a transgender character originally in it. And I wish I'd been able to use that transgender character, but I wasn't, because we made the mistake of showing the script to various trans people. And trans people have had a hell of a bad time, for centuries. And only now is that time becoming easier for them. But I have to say that like a lot of sexual minorities, they're very defensive about what they are. And why shouldn't they be, for goodness sake? But nevertheless, I found so much resistance from the trans community to the things that I was saying. And every trans person that I talked to had a different opinion. You can't say that. Oh, yes, you can say that, but you can't say that. And it'd all be different, because people are finding the level at which they're comfortable. So eventually, sadly, I decided, OK, we just can't have a trans character in this because I'm not trans. So in theory, according to the current mores of the film world, if I'm not trans, I can't you know, show a trans person, or I certainly can't play as an actor a trans person. Now, I think that's crazy, but nevertheless, that's the way it is at the moment. So it was an amazing casting experience. But finally, I got this group of really fantastic actors, and we all got on so well. You know, we were all living and working in this amazing New Orleans mansion, which just looks like $1 million on the screen, I have to say. We were very lucky to get it. We were all living together there and having a great time, and they were really good actors. I mean, I was very, very lucky in that respect. None of them are stars. All of them should be. You know, I mean, seriously, there's a couple of artists in there that I just thought, well, why isn't this person a star right now? And all of them, you know, could and should have really good acting careers and build themselves as actors, as I got a chance to do. You know, when I was a young actor, I went out to the theatre for year after year after year, and I built my sensibilities as an actor, and what I was good at and what I was not good at, and what, you know, all of those things, and just getting experience with different audiences. And then I moved on to TV, and I had lots of chances there. Now, it's really, really tough for young actors of any type, really. It's so difficult.
Yeah.
It's
hard to get that opportunity because, so, you know, as you said earlier, right, so many places are looking for big stars, right? They want big stars because then they can, you know, they feel they'll sell the film or they'll get financing for the film. So,
well, that's true.
If you haven't got a big name, then it's difficult to sometimes get that break.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you can always see it because, you know, you'll see the cast of a movie and it will be so and so and then brackets and what that person has been in, you know, all the movies they've been in. I mean, like me, it's, you know, I don't know, it would be brackets Patriot or something, you know, or brackets Crusade, you know, if it's a TV thing, or,
oh, for sure,
know, brackets, I mean, Babylon 5, and, you know, I mean, all of that stuff. I mean, that's fine. But what about those people who don't have brackets? You know, what about them? Does that mean they're not good actors? Of course it doesn't. It's just so tough. And it's because, well, this is my theory anyway. If you have a different one, tell me. I used to go into, when I first got to Hollywood, I wanted to come here because I wanted to write for the screen. And I'd made one movie in England, and it was so difficult, like 25, 30 years ago, to make a movie in England. I thought, I want to go where movies are made. So I started writing movies, and, you know, I had quite a few made. And I continued my work as an actor. But I used to go into meetings with producers and directors and, you know, people who were interested in my script, or, you know, and it used to be that I would be the most nervous person in the room because I was, you know, presenting something, and were they going to take the script? Were they going to agree? Were they going to mess around with it? You know, now you walk into any casting room in America, and maybe in England too, I don't know, the most nervous people there are the producers, because the producers, there's 1,000 of them lining up outside the door. And they know that they used to allow producer to fail. You know, that's how you got a really good producer. You allowed them to fail.
Yeah.
But now they're not allowed to fail. One failure and they're out. Because it's all about money. Now, it's always been about money. But now it's so much about money that nobody is allowed to fail even once. And I know as an actor, you know, many roles I've done, especially early on, I wasn't very good in, but I learned a lot, you know. And I helped produce this one with an excellent guy in New Orleans called Ben Matheny, really brilliant producer down there. I think that producers are, it's one of the most difficult jobs. It's the most misunderstood job. And it is the most important job, especially in movies, but also now in TV and TV series, you know, because screen series, because a producer is the person who just gets it all together, who takes the vision of the screenwriter, matches it with the vision of the director, gets everyone on board, and then lets it go wherever the director and the actors want to take it. And that is really nerve-wracking. And a good producer is just so valuable and so important. And there is no way that people these days can be good producers unless they win every single time. They're not allowed to fail even once. If they do, their career is over. You know, a young producer getting trying to, you know, work his way up the ladder is taken away from him or her if they have a failure. You know, maybe they'll get back again 10 years later, maybe. But, you know, it's a strange thing that the producers are the most frightened people in my business now.
It is a it's an interesting thing, right? There's a, oftentimes I've watched something and thought it was really good, but it was a flop, right? But the reason a lot of times I feel things flop is the marketing, right? Because did you ever see John Carter?
Remind me. This is a it movie,
was,
isn't it? Yeah.
It was a Disney.
That's right. Film. Yes,
John Carter, yeah. Burroughs.
Yes,
film. Yeah, yes. And I thought it was a really good film, but when you look at the trailer for it and everything else, very confused on what it was.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, the cast was great, the effects were great, everything was great. And when you compare it to a lot of stuff that was out that year, you'd be like, it was better. But the way they marketed it was so bad.
Yeah, it yeah.
didn't do anything. And I think that's a big one, right? Because you see sometimes they've spent half the budget it costs to make the film on marketing.
Yeah.
But you're just,
well, I mean, you kind of have to now. I mean, that is the reality of our business at the moment. I mean, there is a complete divide between artists making their own movies, whether as a director or an actor or a writer, whatever, or a producer, artists making their own movies and maybe if they're lucky, just about breaking even.
Mm.
Complete divide between that kind of real filmmaking and the big market films, which are only created to make money. Well, fair enough, there's nothing wrong with that, but they're only created to fit into a certain niche. You know, this is a horror movie, so we put a couple of stars in it, have a couple of naked ladies in it, yeah, sure. You know, and that is our horror movie, and it fits exactly into this little niche here. And, you know, that's the same with every kind of movie. You know, it's got to fit into a precise niche. What is your audience? That's the question, you know, always. What is your audience? And if you say, oh, well, I want to build a new audience, I want to find a new audience, they say, go away. you're going to lose us a lot of money. Go away. And they're usually more rude than that. And that is the fact. I mean, and I know a lot of people complain about superhero movies. And I know at the same time, a lot of people go and see superhero movies. Mm. So, you know, I feel it's because there's nothing else to see, really. If you think about all the fantastic movies and the variety of movies that were made in the 70s and 80s, even to the 90s a little bit. And then suddenly you get these superhero movies which have just sucked all the air out of the room and sucked all the finance out of everywhere. And between you and me, let me tell you a little secret. They're all crap. They're all total crap. They're about people who are not real, doing things that are not real, in relationships that are not real, on planets that are not real, in worlds that are not real, in bodies that are not real, in makeup that's not real, in CGI that's not real. It's none of it is real. And so, you know, people like me who have just a little bit of brain and want to see something that challenges me from time to time, I had to sit through all of these superhero movies with my son, who's now in his mid-20s, and they were just awful. And, you know, and explosions would happen with no purpose at all, and these superheroes would fly around or create things out of nowhere, and you'd think, okay, well, I'm willing to suspend my disbelief just so far. But, you know, they're just nonsense, you know? And I'd be very interested to see in 20 years if we look back on those movies and if they have any life, you know, after now, because I don't think they will. I think people will look back on them and say, what was that about?
I don't know, because there's ones I really like Blade. I love Blade. Blade is so good.
I wouldn't call that a superhero movie, actually. But yeah, but I know I understand what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Like just the way it starts, you know, the like the house music, and then he just walks in the room. Be like, man, that opening sequence is so good.
But there are
movies that do work. Like, I just remember seeing Black Panther in a cinema, and just the way the audience like lit up with certain scenes. And then, because I remember leaving Karate Kid 3. I went to see Karate Kid 3 in the cinema, and loads of kids left and was like, mom, can I learn karate? And I was doing judo at the time, so I was a little smug. I was like, yeah, I can do some of that shit. What? But everyone was just like, I want to do karate. So like walking out Black Panther, and you just had little kids. It didn't matter, you know, the race, the gender. They're just like Wakanda forever. And it was just like this joyous kind of scenes that you would see. And I think there's certain films that grab people in a certain way. And those will prolong. Now, there are definitely superhero films that you're just like, what was that? Like the story makes no sense. Like the action makes no sense. This was terrible. So I think some of them are definitely throwaway. Some of them will be there.
I think you're right. I mean, Black Panther is a standout. And why was it a standout? Well, A, it took a lot of chances, you know, mostly, I mean, black cast. Now, you know, that's shouldn't be a chance, but it still is, you know.
Oh, sure.
In terms of selling it, you know, to the Far East, for instance, you're not necessarily going to get a sale. And also it had a real story, you know, however super the heroes were, nevertheless, they were still human beings, and you empathized with them, and you wanted them to win or lose, or, you know, you cared about them. I don't care about most superheroes at all. You're right. Inevitably, you know, if you make a broad sweeping statement like all superhero movies are crap, you know, you're quite right to pick me up on it, because, yeah, not all of them are crap, but just most of them. And the real problem with them is that they suck out all the money. That all the money goes to them, because all the producers are saying, and all the accountants are saying, okay, well, that worked, so we'll make 10 more of those. Mm. You know, order me 10 more superhero movies, you know, and the order goes down the line. And
yeah.
And hey, they are amazingly made. I mean, the technical abilities, I have to say, the technical abilities of the British film technicians and the American film technicians are extraordinary now. They will create anything you ask them to. Mm. And, you know, that's amazing now. But I wish they could be used, you know, on stories and characters that were actually worthy of all that hard work. I know, you know, I'm in a minority here. I absolutely acknowledge it. People do go to superhero movies, although some of them have flopped terribly, but people do go to them. You know, they want to see them. But I think they also would want to see a variety of other movies if there was a variety out there. And there isn't. There really isn't.
That's the key statement right there. Variety. Right? And I think it's like with everything, right? It's... you know, like with equality in front and behind a camera, right? It's about breaking down those barriers so everyone has an opportunity. And it should be the same with the content that's out there, right? That you tell all the stories, give people those options, because there used to be that point where there was the options, right? You could go to the cinema, there was action films, crime films, rom-coms, comedies, like there was so many different things that you could pick from.
Yeah.
I mean, there absolutely wasn't as many sci-fi films because it was that point when sci-fi is just stupid. You know what I mean? Like, who wants that? But there were some, right? But now, yeah, it is a thing. When you look at the upcoming film slates, there's so many sequels or reboots and remakes because the studios are so scared to take a chance. And it's when I think about some of my favorite films, there's a lot of indie stuff there, right? I love Richard Linklater's Before trilogy. Those are some of my favorite films, right? I love Love and Basketball, Love Jones, right? There was a film a couple of years ago called Really Love, which is fantastic, right? Enter Galactic, which was just, I think it's like a 50 minute, but it was animated. It was an animated story. I think Keenan Barris produced it, Kid Cody wrote it. And these films have three-dimensional characters. Right? They have real situations because, you know, a thing that I see so often now in a rom-com would be like the characters meet and they just jump into bed, right? There's no, hey, so can I take you on a date?
Yeah, they jump into bed and you don't see anything that happens.
And it's bizarre. And so a lot of the films I love, you see the evolution of a relationship, of that connection.
Yeah.
And there's something magical about that.
But we're talking about evolution of a relationship, if I may interrupt you. You're talking about sci-fi films. Now, just think about one of the greatest sci-fi films ever, Alien, okay? When was that? Was that late 70s or 80s? I can't remember. Anyway,
late, you know, 70s.
Yeah, that was the time, as you say, where you could go to, you know, a cinema or one of the new multiplexes, which were brand new then, you know, and choose what you wanted to see. And there was that sci-fi thing called Alien. Oh, let's try that. Mind-blowing. And it's exactly what you say. It developed. You know, the story and the characters developed. You only saw the monster right at the end. You saw bits of them. Just absolutely brilliant movie. You know, science fiction really can turn us on and make us look at ourselves and do all kinds of things. And, you know, unfortunately, it's now such a broad thing that science fiction, superheroes are now science fiction. I don't think they are. You see, I don't see them as the same at all.
No, I see superheroes. I would class it as fantasy.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah,
there are some sci-fi superhero stories, but you know, I think for the most part, I'd say fantasy, or you just say it's a superhero genre. You know, but it's definitely different from something like Event Horizon, right? Yes. Which was another spectacular film.
And which would not be made now, almost certainly. Oh. Most of the great movies that you love, even over the past 20 years, they would not be made now because no one would finance them. And, you know, I'm really seriously, if I won the lottery tomorrow, you know, and I had 100 million to spare, what would I do? I would make 100 movies, 100 of them, 1 million apiece. You know? 1 million is enough to pay people reasonably well. It's enough to get a good script. It's enough for, no, not a huge star, but, you know, you might get a really fine actor just imagine doing that. I mean, imagine making 100 movies like over 5 years, you know, and like 50 of them might be complete flops. Nobody wants to see them, you know, and 50 of them might perhaps, you know, maybe break even, and maybe only 10 of them would be any good, and maybe one of them would be a masterpiece, but at least it's out there, you know what I mean? Now there is, I tell you, there is as a filmmaker, as I now call myself, having made one, there's a huge difference between a movie that you make on a shoestring that you can just about afford. You can't afford stars, you know, and the kit now, hope you know, which is great. You know, you really can make a movie with your phone.
Oh.
I wouldn't advise it, but you can do it. But the difference between that level of movie making and the multi-million, you know, accountancy shuffle, you know, where you feel that, why are you making this movie? Oh yes, because you've got, you know, you've got to make a million, you know, 10 million loss in this pile, and you've got to make 10 million profit in that pile. And it's all, I mean, it's nothing to do with filmmaking at all. Now, it never has been. That's not new. You know, filmmaking has always been about selling it and making money. There's nothing wrong with that. But at the same time, I really do think that film has lost its audience. When you give the audience something that they actually want to see. Now, not everybody wanted to see Oppenheimer because not everybody wants to see a really serious and interesting movie about a fascinating time with amazing characters. But guess what? They had a choice that month. They could go and see Barbie, which was a totally unexpected movie. It was a comedy, it was light, it was funny, but it made you think, you know, and just about enough. And it was just, there was. And the reason why people go on and on about, you know, Barbenheim or Oppen Barbie, whatever you want to call it, is because it's so rare now to have two completely different movies in the cinemas at the same time. It's almost unique now. In the old days, as you say, you could go out and there'd be every choice of movie you could want, and you could be pretty damn sure that most of them would be really, really good. Some of them would be masterpieces, and all on the same week, you know. And yes, you can say, oh well, you can now go on to, you know, onto the streamers, and you can see anything you want. It's not the same. Okay, streaming is great. You can see anything you want at any time of day you want, and that's wonderful. But it's not the same as going into a cinema, a lovely old-fashioned place where you pay money at the door and you walk in and you sit down with a whole load of total strangers and you watch a movie and you share that experience. You know, that is just different. It's totally different. And
Oh,
if
for
you
sure.
are interested in that, then we don't just need Oppenheimer and Barbie, you know, for 1 month. We need that every single month. We need to see, you know, five, six, seven really good movies that we can go and see. And we're not given that choice anymore.
No, it's funny, right? It's the thing I love about a film festival, because the variety of films I will see, right? It's definitely an odd one at times, because a press screening is so different from a general screening, right? Is people don't always want to react or
Yes.
laugh at certain, like there's times I'm laughing my head off and people are looking like, you can't laugh at that. And it's just like, I can laugh at whatever I want, man. You know what I mean? But man, is I just remember at the last London Film Festival, right? I saw like Poor Things, Shortcomings. I saw The Kitchen, The Book of Clarence, which had to be my favorite film of the festival.
Oh,
It
no,
was
interesting.
so good, right? But there was such a variety of films, you know, it was just
Yeah,
joyous. But then,
most of which never gets a wide release.
well, that's the thing I was going to say, right? There's so many times when you know, you watch something great, you're telling everyone about, I'd be like, yo, you need to see this film. And then it's just like, but where? Right? In, I think it was in 2019, I saw a film called Blaze. And it was about the country musician, Blaze, I forget his surname. But it was like Ethan Hawke produced it. It was such a great doc like film. I don't even know where it is now. It didn't get released in a cinema, I'll tell you that. And it was definitely not in the UK. And that's such a shame. It's such a shame.
You've mentioned a name there, which is very interesting, Ethan Hawke. I don't know the gentleman at all. I have enormous respect for him because, you know, he does the acting, you know, some of it just for money, maybe, I don't know. But he also creates, he produces movies, he directs them. He, you know, he's created some amazing movies, including some really difficult and risky ones. I wish I could remember the name of it. I'm not good at names either.
Well,
You
he
know,
was in the Before trilogy. Rick Linklater's Before trilogy with
right,
Julie Delpy.
yes.
You know
There
what
are
I mean?
so few people like that, who will actually take a chance on the art, and I know, I understand films have to make money, otherwise they'll stop being made. But if you don't concentrate some of your efforts on the art of filmmaking, the art of telling a story in that medium, then all you're doing is repeating the same stuff, even the same scripts, over and over and over again. And
Oh, yeah.
yeah, I mean, how many people actually want to make a sequel? How many people actually, I mean, Alien, let's talk about Alien. Now, Alien was such a great movie that, yes, you did want to see more of it. You wanted to see the next bit of it. You wanted to see Alien 2. So you went to see Alien 2. A very good movie. Now, I don't know whether Alien 3, 4, 5, 6, I don't know whether the others would be considered great movies. Maybe not.
No, you won't.
And I can understand, yes, you need to make money, but why do that? Nobody wants to be in a sequel unless it's incredibly well written and really something special, like the Toy Story sequels. They took years over them, and they were really interesting movies that sprang out of that original, Toy Story 1, as we now know it. But that happens so rarely. Usually, the only people who want to make sequels are the studios, or, the money people. The producers, this worked, so let's do it again, call it number two, and let's do it again and call it number seven. Now, F Fast and Furious, they're great, they're fun films, but I'm
Well,
sorry, the
I
last
don't know
one was
about that.
exactly the same as the first one, but not as good,
Well,
and you think, why are you making nine or ten of these things,
the thing about the Fast films, right? The first one was these street guys who liked racing. Now they're frigging spies. They're working for the government. Like, I watched the last one, and they are trying to deflect a bomb with the car, and I'm just like, what am I watching?
Yeah, I'm
This
afraid I
is,
didn't even see it, I'm
oh
afraid.
my God. And there was no depth to any of the, I hated it. Now, there's loads of people that loved it, which this is the thing, right? That's choice, that's variety. And I'm okay with that. I don't have to like every single thing out there, but there should be choice. So for every Fast and the Furious, give me a Book of Clarence, give me a Before Sunrise. You
Give
mean,
you a
give
sex
me
positive.
something different. Exactly. That's what I want. I want, and like with your film right now, you say, it, there's the constraints of, right, the big stars, their agents aren't giving them that script. But what it has done is given that cast an opportunity to shine, right? And that's the beauty of a film like yours, because so many times you'll watch a film and it's Will Smith, right? It's Johnny Depp, and you're like, but that's just Will Smith being Will Smith, or that's just Johnny Depp being a drunk pirate again,
Which can be
right?
extraordinary. It can be extraordinary, but
Yes,
you have seen it before. Yeah, absolutely.
exactly. And so sometimes you just be like, there's so many great actors and actresses. Let's see someone else. Let's have someone else. Like with a animated film and the voice, a lot of times it's just someone being themselves, right? Now, the great anime, like I just, Encanto, I loved Encanto, right? It seemed like there was a different, fresh voice cast, and that these characters came to life. And that's what I want. I don't just want a big name reading the lines and being themselves. I want someone breathing life into something, right? And you want that in everything you see, that people throw themselves into a role. They become that role. It's not just big name being big name in this film. you know?
I mean, the problem is that, we do sound like a couple of old whiners, don't we? And we are whining, there's no question. The fact is that artists in the film industry and the television industry, as it was, and the arts generally have always complained about this. But in the past, at least there was some outlet for artistic inspiration in a movie. Now, if you get artistic inspiration in a movie, it's like the kiss of death. People, the sellers of movies, so well, nobody wants to see an artistic movie. People do actually. It's not a huge audience, but there is an audience out there. And do they want to see new people? Yes, they do. They really want to see new people.
Oh, for
But
sure.
no, you can't take a risk on someone new because, they're not known. And you can't put a bracket after them, saying they were in this movie or that TV series or whatever. And when the extraordinary thing is that when occasionally an actor breaks through, and they say, "Oh, we've got this new actor," always, nearly always, you will find, what do you mean you? This actor's been working for 30 years, before he or she got a big break, and there are so many artists there whose work should be seen, and for one reason or another, it's not. It's usually the commercial reason. In the case of my film, it's because of the subject matter, which is difficult. And although it's a romantic comedy, there's very few romantic comedies around. There is one out there right now which is doing fairly well. I can't even remember the name of it. But of course, and I haven't seen it, I have to admit. But of course, there's very little chances taken with it. There's no nudity, as far as I can understand, or real emotional depth to it. But at least it's a romantic comedy.
Are
But
you
that's one
thinking?
in the year.
Yeah, are you thinking of the one with the guy from Top Gun?
I do know. I
Glenn
can't.
Powell. I think, yeah, I
I
think there's
can't
a.
even remember what it's called. In that shameful, but nevertheless, I saw. Oh, look, there's a romantic comedy out there. But I mean, again, you used to have a choice, but now you don't.
Yes, I know. It's, yeah, I don't know. It's this really odd situation that we found ourselves in. And it's such a shame, right?
Were
Because
you?
it's
Yeah.
stifling creativity
It is.
and
We used to be told, wait till the streamers come, because then there'll be a channel for every kind of different thing. Whatever you're interested in, there'll be a channel you can see it. Well, yeah, except, there's not. I mean, maybe. I mean, and people may say, well, art movies, who wants to see them? They're boring. And that's an opinion which people have always had, right from Truffaut and the French New Wave. People then said, oh, these are boring films, but I think it's really important that that our output should be more general, and there should be a place at least for some kind of artistic inspiration or some kind of breaking of the barriers. Now, my movie, Sex Positive, it's not an art movie. It's not a great work of art. It's a romantic comedy. It's there to make you laugh, and that's completely respectable and a good thing to do. I'm not suggesting that every movie has to be serious and all that. No, not at all. You can have every kind of, you can have superhero movies too, just not, 300 of them. Squeezing everything else out, and while I'm at it, and to wind up, perhaps, if we're getting towards that, while I'm at it, what about bald actors? What's wrong with bald actors? Why do we always play baddies? When I'm casting stuff, I play all the P's: priests, pederasts, pimps, policemen. Anyone who's slightly unpleasant. Anyway, so yes. Why can't I, wear a lovely wig and play a 25-year-old? Well, okay, no, you can go too far with your wishes, can't you?
But the thing, right? So I tried my hand at auditions back in the day, and a lot of times I was told, you look too weird. You look too, no, we don't need you. But then the only, like, albino you might see in a film is a bad guy.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? I mean, it's disgraceful, isn't it? You know,
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
it used to be that the only homosexual in a movie would be the bad guy or the slightly weird, you know, nasty person in the background. You know, I mean, we can't do that anymore, and nor should we. You know, but at the same time, there's nothing wrong with having the occasional homosexual who's playing a nasty role, or the occasional albino who's a bad guy. But if that's the only time you see them,
I
then yeah,
know.
that is a little strange, isn't it?
Yeah, it's yeah, it's very bizarre the way the industry works. But
Anyway, what I want to say to you is, in a shameless advertisement for my movie, which is that if you actually do want to see something you really cannot see anywhere else, you know, that's just romantic. It's fun. It's a comedy, but it doesn't hide stuff. You know, it's about sexuality, and there's lots of nudity in it because that's the way people are when they're having sex. You know, not many people, some do, but not many people wear clothes when they're having sex, and sex is a huge part of our lives. So, you know, why don't the movies reflect that? It's just so strange. You know, it just seems weird to me. That there are so few movies that have any kind of sexual fun in them at all, and mine
And
does. You know,
honestly,
it's
as
difficult to
well.
sell it. It's difficult to sell it. We've managed to actually sell it to Stars USA, so
Ah.
it, you know, that which I'm very pleased about. And so you will be able to see it from August, and we're going out on TVOD and SVOD and all the other VODs, so you'll be able to stream it. And yeah, unfortunately. It's extremely difficult to break through to the media if you haven't got stars, and it's very difficult if you do not have any budget for marketing. You know, I mean, we're going out in we have a week booked in Los Angeles because we got a very good deal from a great movie house, the Lumiere, and we're going out in 20 screens across the USA.
Nice.
And it's really, really tough because each of those individual screens, you know, what do we do? Do we try and market around them? Do we try and get press? It's so difficult to get it out there. You know, but yeah, it'll be streaming, and hopefully it'll be seen. And my sort of movie, this sort of movie, yeah, you can actually watch it on a TV screen and enjoy it. You know, Oppenheimer and Barbie, you really want to see them in a cinema. You know, you really want to. But there you are. Yeah, I mean, it's hard because it's you know, you do try your best as an artist, and certainly as a director I have, and you know, you try and put something out there that is good and fun, but you know that you're never going to get the major press looking at it. You're never going to get reviews that are going to tell people that this movie is on. Even bad reviews are good because at least they tell people it's on, you know. And I've been trying to get my local radio station to just even mention it. I can't even get a hold of them, you know. It's yeah, it's really tough, really tough.
It's
Anyway, there you
a
are.
stretch. But I, you know what I really liked about the film was the honest conversations that were being had between the characters, right? And you know, you had Louisa, I think it is, G's
Jeez,
Louise's
jeez,
character. Yeah. Now, a lot of times in a film, a lesbian character will end up having sex with a guy. You know what I mean? Like, all that, but you didn't do it. And I love the fact that you did not do that. And it was
Well, I mean, you know,
refreshing.
a lot of heterosexual directors think that lesbians aren't really lesbians, you know. You know, they can't possibly really,
I'm a
really, I
bit
mean,
like that.
like dreadful. Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, it among the characters, there's a guy who's really nervous about it, and won't take his clothes off, and won't because he thinks his penis is too small. You know, I mean, of all the ridiculous ideas not to have sex, you know, that is among the most ridiculous. But I tell you, there's a hell of a lot of men, and especially young men, who think, oh, my penis is too small, and everyone sees porn nowadays, and they're like, you know, 15 inches long, and I won't be able to cope, and nobody will like it. I mean, it's all nonsense. But there's so much nonsense that we think about sex and sexuality, you know, and there's a gay guy, and no, he doesn't play with. The women in the story because he's gay, okay? He's male and he's gay, so he likes guys. But the thing is that what I try and do is to show that there is an amazing bond between heterosexual women and homosexual men. There always has been this amazing bond, you know. Whatever your particular kink or weirdness, well, it's not weird, is it? Whatever your particular difference is, there's always something serious to be said about it, and there's always something funny to be said about it.
Oh,
You know?
the BDSM club was hilarious.
The
That was sex? Get out of here! Oh
Yeah.
my God,
I'll just
that
sketch
was
out the
so great.
scene that Virginia falls for Jake, okay, who is one of the guys who's kept by the women at this house, you know, and lives there. She falls for him, actually falls in love with him, and of course that's a very dangerous thing to do, you know, because Jake is he enjoys sex very much, but he doesn't want to get into any kind of relationship, and that's a lot of the story. But they try and try everything sexual, you know, from A to Z, A to Z, but in alphabetical order, and they get to B, so they try BDSM, so they get this BDSM club, okay? And there's people being whipped there, and there's all kinds of chains and things hanging down, and then the very serious BDSM guy, and they are all very serious BDSM people, they're very serious about what they do. You know, the master, the dominant there says, well, what would you like? And he goes through a whole list of stuff that they do. What would you like to do to, he says this to Jake and Virginia. And Virginia says, well, actually, we just like to do sex. And they're all absolutely horrified because the one thing that they do not do is sex. That's not what they do at all.
More BDSM.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that was, oh my God, I was laughing, man. You had me laughing. That was great. You know, but it was the, you know, I did enjoy the fact that, you know, within this film, there were these very kind of poignant conversations and discussions about certain things, right? Which was just, that's what you need, right? To have these honest things rather than, right? Because, you know, you'll have a film and there'll be, you know, a couple of virgins in the film and they have sex and it goes, you know, and they're like, it'll be like 6 hours later and they'll be like, that was incredible. And it's just like, come on now. If they're both virgins, they've not, you know, they didn't want to talk about sex or anything. They didn't know what they were doing. They were probably fumbling around, right?
Yeah,
It's not
absolutely.
going to be incredible the first time, and especially if you don't know the person, so you
Yeah,
don't know
yeah,
what
yeah.
they like, what they don't like, how
Yeah.
they want to be touched,
Yeah,
where, and
absolutely.
blah,
And
blah, blah.
we have another scene where, you know, and a lot of these scenes, you know, I have actually heard and experienced, you know, or overheard, and I have certainly overheard women talking about penises. And how weird they are, and what strange shapes they are, and the variety of them, and the physical things that they do. And, you know, so I wrote this scene with these three women, all of whom
Oh,
friends,
yes.
with one man, Jake, our hero, standing there completely naked, and they're looking at his penis and they're saying, why is it that shape? Why does it do that? You know, what's that bit to do with? You know, why has it got that extra thing hanging down that it's not necessary? You know,
Jump
and
up and down.
yeah, and they tell him to jump up and down. You know, doesn't that hurt? You know, where do you put it all? You know, I mean, all these ridiculous, you know, questions. I've always thought they're just so funny. You know, just to, so you know, there the scene can be found, and it's a very, very funny scene, I think.
Yeah,
And
no, that was That was just
Yeah, they get him to jump up and down.
Put on your underwear.
They get him to jump up and down, and then they think, oh, we want a bit more of that, so they tell him to run on the spot. And so everything flops all over the place, and you know, and it's, so yeah, it's that silly, this movie. Okay.
There's legitimate laugh out loud moments.
Oh, well, that's
right?
Great.
There are comedies where you mean that. Yeah, that was fun. That was fine. That was fine. Yeah. Right? But you're not just laughing out loud, and there's a joy when you can just open up and just let rip a huge laugh.
Absolutely.
And there were moments in your film where you could do that, which was superb.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. Thank you very much. Kevin, I could talk all day with you. Great to talk with. And this is a lovely show to do. I actually have to go because this is California. You know, I'm in Los Angeles and, you know, I have a limited time here. I have other meetings to attend. So it's been really so lovely to talk to you. And thank you so much for bringing some attention to me and my movie. Because it won't get much other attention, I got to say.
Oh, no, the film, I really did enjoy it. It was great. So people go, because, you know, I think, look, if you like things like Zach and Miri Make a Porno, right? Yes. Just, you know what I mean? Stuff like that, like Super Bad, you know what I mean? Just, there was a film, The End of Sex, that came out last year. Things like that, then sex positive, you're going to enjoy it. You're going to laugh out loud, and it covers so many different things. It's great. So definitely go see it, people.
Thank you so much, Kevin. That's really nice of you to say, and it's been great to talk to you.
Well, I'm just so glad I got a chance to sit down with Galen. Because
we must do this again, and we must talk about all the old stuff I've done. Crusade.
that would be superb. It's Babylon 5, that was my show. Star Trek Deep Space Nine was fine, but Babylon 5 was where it was at for me, man. Yeah. That was where it was at.
Joe Michael Straczynski, one of the greats.
Absolutely. So good. But okay. Thank you for your time, man. Really appreciate it, and all the success with the film, because I think when people actually see it, they're going to embrace it.
Well, thank you. I really hope so, and thank you very much for drawing attention to it.
No problem at all, man. No problem.
Bye, Kevin.
At all.
Bye. Right.
Take it easy. Bye. So that was, boy, that was a great conversation with Peter, man. Talking about the film, just movies in general, and there was so much left on the table, right? We didn't get into the back catalogue, all the other things that he has done. But yeah, so enjoyable. I hope you liked it. And that's just a taster, people, because we got two more parts of 300 for you. So, people, share this with your friends, and let's see you in part 3.